Hi, I'm Britton LaRue, and this is Moon to Moon. Moon to Moon is a space to consider, celebrate, and share the ways we come home to ourselves, anchor through change, and uncover our power. 1 month, one phase, one loving step at a time. Isn't that music beautiful? I just love listening to the Moon to Moon music so much. It just feels so right for my spirit and for what I wanted for this podcast. And the creator of this music is my dear friend, collaborator, student, client, teacher, the amazing overall human being that is Jonathan Coe. Many of you in my community are familiar with Jonathan because Jonathan and I have, we just do a lot together. Originally, we were doing a lot together in the sense that Jonathan would sign up for basically anything that I offered and become a treasured participant in the conversations with the group. Jonathan was originally my client going back to September, I believe, of 2019. And then as I began to put out teaching offerings and step into my Hierophant, Jonathan was just always there. And Jonathan took part in the first Charting Your Course. And from that experience, Jonathan realized that they are madly in love with the language of astrology. And Jonathan has found other teachers to expand and augment everything that we were learning together. And now Jonathan is an astrologer who is paid for their beautiful, beautiful space holding and readings. It feels really lovely that the last episode of Moon to Moon was a conversation with my astrology teacher, and that this conversation is now one with someone who has been my astrology student and is now someone who really teaches me, because Jonathan has learned so much from so many different sources and also transforms all of those teachings with their own personal gnosis, their own connection to the language. And I'm always astonished by just things that Jonathan says about astrology, because it's like, oh, you're. I hadn't thought about it that way. I love this. I really admire Jonathan's ability to be good at so many things, to learn so quickly and so deeply, to hear people and see people and reflect their beauty back to them, to ask really incredible questions, or to recognize like the subtext of what the conversation's really about, and to name that and bring that truth into illumination, whether it's one-on-one or in groups. Jonathan's an incredible, incredible human being and a real treasure in my life. So I don't give a lot of that context, or we like hint at it throughout the conversation, but I wanted to share that before I offer the conversation to you in case you're not familiar with Jonathan. Not all listeners to Moon to Moon have been in my classes or in my Patreon space. So Maybe you don't have the context. That's why I'm sharing. Let me read for you Jonathan's bio. This is from our Charting Your Course page that will soon be ready, because Jonathan is going to be assisting me this time, teaching my longer term course to teach the foundations of astrology. And we are excited to kick off this series that I'm doing here on Moon to Moon called Living the Fuck Out of Your Chart, which is a phrasing that you'll hear the origins of which in this conversation that comes from Jonathan. So, Jonathan's bio. Jonathan Coe, they, he, is a queer mystic who's fluent in the languages of music, astrology, tarot, energy, and statistics. His work aims to empower others, or their work aims to empower others through compassionate discernment, to nurture communities of passionate seekers, and to shift the collective myths of shoulds and not enough. Growing up in Jakarta, Indonesia, Jonathan spent the majority of their life pretending to be the textbook perfect kid. They worked hard in school, got into their wildest dream school, got a respectable job that pays well, and even realized a childhood dream of releasing their own music. This externally directed framework only led to more confusion and disillusionment. During their Saturn return, Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way mysteriously came into their life. Through Google's mysterious enchanted algorithm, Jonathan found Britton and knew right away that she was the right astrologer to work with. Since then, Jonathan has embarked on a journey to deepen their love for astrology, tarot, and energy healing. Jonathan's primary astrology teachers are Britton LaRue, Sabrina Monarch, Diana Rose Harper, and Chris Brennan, whose training programs they've either completed or are currently enrolled in. Jonathan is also deeply influenced by the works of Mark Jones, Richard Tarnas, Demetra George, and Alice Sparkly Cat. At the heart of Jonathan's work as a healing artist is the desire to continually develop, transform, and question the languages we use to describe our internal and relational realities. As a graduate of Charting Your Course, Jonathan recognizes the profound, lasting transformation through studying astrology requires Saturnian time, lunar care, and Venusian reciprocity. It's Jonathan's hope and commitment to provide future Charting Your Course participants with the support, tools, framework, and practices to build their own relationship with astrology over time. Jonathan currently lives with and works in unceded, occupied Lenape land, currently called Brooklyn, New York. Jonathan is a Virgo rising, Pisces sun, Gemini moon, a generator, and an ENFJ. In their spare time, Jonathan enjoys going on long walks, binging Netflix shows, and exploring various meditation techniques as embodiment practices. So, without further ado, I give you my conversation with my dear, dear, dear friend, Jonathan Coe. Thank you for coming on Moon to Moon, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me, Britton.
Your second time on.
Yes.
So today, what we're doing here is introducing a phrasing that we've been having a lot of fun with for, I guess, over a year now, which is this idea of living the fuck out of your chart. And I thought we could begin with telling the origin stories of this term, and then
riff on what we feel it means to us. And then I would love to, thank you for agreeing to look at your chart, to look at how you are living the fuck out of your chart, Jonathan.
All right. I'm excited.
I know that normally I have listeners that tell me they play this with their children in the car. So this one will have an explicit on it.
That's a good idea. Yes.
Yeah. So let me first say, like, when I remember you saying this, and then you can share where how it seeded in you. So I thought it was in a reading together, but you reminded me the other day that it was in a charting or course meetup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like it must have been early on, like maybe the first portal or so.
Either the first or the second portal, whichever one where you asked us to state our intentions or share our intentions for the time together, because I know portal one was more geared towards just understanding the chart, the different houses, right? It was more like the building blocks. So I think it might have been the second portal.
Okay, where we begin doing a little more like activation of your chart as opposed to like the general language.
That's right.
Right, okay. And so you had said you had heard somebody say that they really just wanted to, they wanted a reading, or they wanted to understand their chart so that they could live the fuck out of it. And we all died laughing.
It was a pretty great moment for the group.
It was bonding.
Totally.
We definitely reached a new level that day. And this is such a zinger, you know, it's such a zinger because it just, what I mean by zing, right, is like when you feel in your whole body a kind of yes around like truth being spoken.
It was visceral. So, yeah.
So why don't you share where you feel like you first heard this?
Yeah, I remember it very vividly, actually. I think it must have been right before we started Portal 1. And I remember seeing an email from you that says, it was a long introductory email that says, please set your intentions, you know, bring any objects that are dear to you for this journey and so forth, right? And I remember reading that email on my way into, like, this was early days of the pandemic, right? So we had to wait outside to get in line to Trader Joe's. And after reading that email, I was, or I, perhaps while I was reading that email, I was also listening to this podcast. It's Magic of the Spheres by Sabrina Monarch. And the guest at that time was brilliant astrologer Diana Rose Harper, which later became one of my teachers too. But they were having conversations, and the context was around studying the charts of famous people. And what a fun exercise that is, because Diana had said that famous people tend to live the fuck out of their charts. And that was, I remember, like, you know, if I can paint a picture for the listeners and for you, me literally, you know, picking carrots, right, in the grocery store and like hearing that term, and it was just kind of like a full body, like, hell yes, right? Like, that's what I want to do with astrology. Yeah, and I think that's just so profound because, as you know, prior to astrology, like, I've always been, you know, and in fact, I can even argue that I've known astrology, like, astrology has been in my life for a long time before I start studying my chart pretty seriously. And it's been in my life for a long time before I really invested the time and energy to learn more about astrology in like a systematic way, right? So yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, as I go back to that moment, right, of hearing that term, I feel like there's something that is really essential, you know, to that sentiment, right, of wanting to live the fuck out of your chart. Because there can be a tendency with any typing or personality system that it just kind of becomes like either like a stereotyping thing, you know, or like it kind of becomes, I don't know, like something that you, it becomes a mask, you know, it's like you're putting on masks, right, rather than actually embodying whatever it is that you're learning. But I think what's so special about astrology is that there's such depth and, I don't know if multiplicity is the right word, but there are just so many multiple meanings that are possible, right? That you can really find your own way to embody what your chart is telling you. And in fact, we can even argue that you're kind of always living the fuck out of your chart, right? But it's like, you know, this term that you use, skillful versus unskillful, I think it's kind of the distinguishing factor, right? Or like awareness versus lack of awareness. Like, are you aware that you are doing XYZ, or are you kind of not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that when I was thinking about like what was it that's such a zinger about that, it really carries carries a lot of agency, you know. Mm. Living the fuck out of something, it's like you really feel like a lean in, you know, around the invitation, you know.
Yeah.
And I was thinking a lot too about like, I do think we're always living our chart, but obviously, you know, I thought about how it's funny that my workbooks are living the signs, like living the fuck out of the signs. Yeah. You want to live the fuck out of Leo? And like, what's the difference? Like, if you're going to feel into like, what does it mean to add the fuck out of, you know, in there?
Yes.
And it would be a fun group discussion. But I feel like we're always really living our chart, right? Like, we're always living our chart.
Totally.
I feel that to live the fuck out of it is right to really aim into the skillful groove set. I don't think it necessarily means quote unquote like successful, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of the trappings of whatever somebody might say, like clearly if someone's a celebrity, they're famous, they're living the fuck out of something about their chart, you know. That's awesome, but I don't think you need to be like quote unquote successful or famous to be living the fuck out of your chart, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I feel like it, tell me what you think about this. I feel like for me, the shift just has something to do with responsibility. And this kind of like takes me back to meeting you at your first reading with me. And one of the first things you shared with me is feeling this responsibility.
Yeah.
To like understand your chart and to be connected to your chart. And that was well before we all had the big last class. I feel like when you take responsibility for the gifts of your chart, that is so huge. You take responsibility for like the healing in your chart, that's so huge. And you're taking responsibility for the reprogramming in your chart, that's huge. Because you're gonna live it, mm-hmm. but it's like, do you wanna live it in a way that's like where you feel trapped by it, or that you're projecting your problems onto it? I feel like living the fuck out of your chart has something to do with like fully embracing everything that you can learn from it and going for it. And also, I don't think that you need to know anything about your chart or astrology to be living the fuck out of your chart.
That's
like,
right.
You don't need astrology to tell you. Like, you're just intuitively picking up on what these invitations are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, in the context of that conversation that Diana Harper and Sabrina Monarch were having, There really is a sense of like when we look at famous people's charts, we also know, kind of maybe the trajectory, or it's very, perhaps we don't know their internal world, right? But we know what kind of aura or what vibe they're giving off, to in their public life, right? And so that's a very powerful way of kind of tying in astrology, because you can see how certain aspects or certain relationships of planets in the chart play out in the public realm, right? In a very visible way. And I think going back to this idea of responsibility that you mentioned, I feel like, this conversation came up in one of the groups. I think it was like a class that I was in around like if this system, right, comes into your field and you are responsible or you're interested enough in it, then often, to learn it and to really gain deeper understanding of the system and how it can impact your life is like the responsible thing to do, rather than just kind of being like, oh, I know my sun sign and that's it, right? Yeah, so that's what I will say to that. I do feel like when it comes to this idea of learning to live the fuck out of your chart, something that you pointed out, and this is maybe more sort of like a subtext rather than like something you said explicitly, is like, how much do we put our hands on the wheel, if that analogy makes sense, right? Because there's a certain level of like letting go that I think needs to happen in any sort of living, right? Because I think astrology is like, what I guess my question or my what I'm thinking about right now is like, where is the line between self-knowledge, self-responsibility, and like micromanaging, right? Because right with astrology, I think it's easy to just kind of, I don't know, like check your transit every day and kind of go down the astrology rabbit hole, right? Thinking about all these different possibilities that the transit may show up, or like the different ways that certain dynamics in your chart can play out in situations. But you do kind of have to, proverbially go out of the house, right? And like test it out, which is why, it's so great that I was just listening to your conversation with Adam, and the two of you were talking about the idea of field study, right? Using astrology, or like applying this lens of field study in astrology. And I think that's so great because it is an applied art. It's not something that we can just sit in our laboratory, right? Or like journal for like 10 hours about our chart.
Even though
Totally.
that might be really safe and fun. I
Yes, exactly. Yes.
have to tell you, just because it really viscerally came into my field as you were talking about the car and hands on the wheel visual metaphor there. I was thinking about how, like, there are times in your life where you may feel like you have a pretty good sense of being behind a wheel, and you may feel like, gosh, I'm just so dialed into my chart, or like, I'm so dialed into my astrology, like everything's easy now, you know? And I feel like, this year is really, and for many people, I've had this sense of kind of like I got it almost in a wreck and I was like thrown out, but I kind of like started standing back up again, like dusting off my knees, like checking my cuts and bruises, making sure everything's okay. And then it's like, all right, and like reorienting to the map, just like, okay, that wasn't what I thought was gonna happen, but like I can get back in. And that my chart can continue to guide me even like post hands on the wheel sense, and I think that when you have a good knack for your chart, and an intuition, even if you don't know astrology, an intuition for yourself. You can reorient even when you get derailed, you know?
Yeah. And one thing that I've been thinking a lot about with regards to astrology, and specifically really getting serious about studying the natal chart, is this idea of the ecosystem within, right? Because as we all know, we're not just one self, you know? There's no such thing as like the authentic self, right? Like
right.
The one side that is like truly you. Like, I think we live in a culture that really values authenticity, which is great. But sometimes authenticity can be conflated with this kind of two-dimensional flat personality, you know, like it's almost like a caricaturing. I don't know if that's even a word. I'm just Jupitering my Mercury here. like a caricature of like a human being, right? And I think astrology is so good because it inherently, it's so good at fighting that notion or debunking that notion, because inherently it recognizes that there are all these planetary influences and they live outside, they also live within you, they also live within the world around you, and it forces you to look at all these different archetypes, right? You can't study the birth chart and only look at your moon or only look at your sun, because that's just, you're not done. You know, there's so much more. And as you become more curious about all these different planetary archetypes and what kind of relationship you might be building with it, I think you develop this resistance, you know, towards the tendency for the culture, or maybe, you know, if you work in an institution or you are with certain people who just wants to shove you into a particular box, it makes you just more naturally resistant towards that. Like it becomes, I see astrology as like this really Uranian force that kind of, I don't know, like before you even get into the box, like you just tear apart the box, you know?
Yeah. The more you drop into it with yourself, the more you're like, whoa, everybody's got the chart. Like, and you can start feeling with so much more compassion, I feel, for other people.
Yes.
Because they too have a Pluto, you know, they too have these placements that they work with. Maybe they're trying to hide it, you know, maybe they're quietly working on it. Maybe it's very obvious that they're working on it, or maybe it's obvious that they don't work on it.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. But I feel like the language can allow you to feel more compassion for every individual's unique experience and invitation. So we just kind of just started talking about like, isn't astrology great? We do that sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, let me tell the listeners, you may hear this after we're publishing this, but I mean, after we do it, but we are doing a webinar on this topic of living the fuck out of your chart on mm-hmm. August 5th. And I'll have various places, you know, a website, my Instagram, show notes, where you can still access it, even if you missed it the night of Thursday, August 5th, where we'll just keep riffing on this and invite you into ways to think about living the fuck out of your own chart.
Yes.
But I would love to turn to you a little more and talk more about your chart, talk more about how you're living the fuck out of your chart.
Okay.
Why don't you, like, thinking about who you are now, especially for any listeners who maybe aren't familiar with your voice and haven't heard of you before or interfaced with you at all. Why don't you share a little bit about how you came to be who you feel yourself to be right now? And we'll just trust that, you know, of course we could talk about that all day, but we'll just trust that the anecdotes and the storytelling is just exactly what it's supposed to be for you.
Sure. I'm trying to think about where to start because I feel like then we'll just be here talking about my life, you know? But yeah, let me think about this. I feel like maybe a good place to start is the fact that I was born in Jakarta, Indonesia, and I lived there for about 17 years of my life. I moved to New York to go to college to study classical piano. So already I think in the early parts of my life, there has always been this, I wouldn't say push and pull, but I really feel like there, you know, I was always a kid who was good at a lot of different things. And I think I pick things up pretty easily, in that I'm a very mutable, very adaptable person. You know, I think I'm a very moldable kid, or I was a very moldable kid, and probably still am a very moldable person now. I studied classical piano in New York, and then I, you know, after I graduated, I realized that playing the piano wasn't really that. This sounds a little crazy, but it's like, I think I realized after I was done with school, probably the last year or so at school, that I wasn't really cut out to be the concert pianist that I thought I wanted to be.
How did you know this?
I just started feeling really unhappy. And I felt like, you know, there was, maybe, you know, I can backtrack into the days when playing the piano was still in affinity with me or still like in resonance with me. I think at that time, you know, I was really like a straight A student, right? In high school, in middle school, I was always like working really hard to get good grades. And I feel like piano was really, and I also had a lot of trouble fitting in socially. Like I always feel like I couldn't really, I don't know, if there's one language that I couldn't pick up on, it's like how to talk to my peers, if that makes sense. Like that was always really tough for me. And yeah, I think I was always like, I always felt like I was a little too serious. I was a little too like just disconnected, like what I was interested in, how my mind works, the way I see other people was just not fitting in with the culture that I grew up in and also the people that I was surrounded with. And so I think as part of my coping mechanism, I was always trying to be like top of my class. You know, like I tried to buy my way into acceptance through my intelligence and through my ability to work really, really hard. And so with music, you know, I think music was just always such a magical force in my life. But I would say, I would even argue that growing up, I was always very artistic. So I was always really into drawing, into art, into writing. It just so happens that I think music was the one that I was most praised. I received the most praise from, you know, and also piano specifically was not easy, right? Like you really had to study piano for a while and you had to be pretty, you have to put in the hours. Like I don't know a single person who just like wakes up and became a great piano player. You know, it just doesn't exist. It requires a certain level of endurance and also persistence and patience, I think, to cultivate the skills. So I wouldn't say that I was an amazing piano player growing up in my teens, but I was really, I practiced way more than everybody else, you know, and so I was just much better than everyone else that I grew up around, you know, and so I feel like there was a sense of, Like it's an inner rebellion, I think, looking back. Playing the piano, playing music was a way for me to allow myself to not be stereotyped into that very smart kid or like very hardworking kid. And I think what was also kind of challenging, right, about my childhood and about being the straight-A student archetype was that I don't think I was really interested in most of the things I was good at. I was getting good grades, but I just wasn't into it. You know, like I got good grades for like biology. I always like get good grades for physics and all these other subjects. But I just, at that time at least, couldn't be bothered. Like the only thing I wanted to do was like make art. I only wanted to express myself. So I would say that like self-expression has always been a primal driving force for me throughout my life up until today. And it's interesting because it's also very much intertwined with like the desire to also be validated by my external circumstances, if that makes sense. It's like not only do I want to express myself, but it's like, here are the songs that I wrote. Do you like them? You know? Or like, here is, you know, a poem I wrote. Do you like them? And so I remember, you know, being in like middle school and feeling very drawn towards writing. And for whatever reason, I was just really wanting to write in English, because at that time, I think I was reading a lot of Harry Potter, like all these novels, right? And at that time, I wasn't at a point where my English was good enough for me to write a novel, or it wasn't like at a level where I can fake it, you know, in a way. So there is that story around like maybe not being, you know, having mercury problems, right? Shall we say? and so, you know, the choice at that time was to do music. And for some reason, I think I've always just gotten music. Like I understand music, and I was able to kind of get on with the program around like discipline, right, which is required in music. And so I think I really got into piano because A, I do enjoy it. I did enjoy it, and I still do enjoy it. And B, I was better than everybody else around me, you know? But to then fast forward to like the end of my master's degree in classical piano, I was struggling because it started to feel like I was trying to fit myself into a box that I was just never interested being a part of, you know? And it didn't feel like that at the time. Like at that time, I just felt like, oh, I was such a failure, you know, for like not wanting to do this. But looking back, I think it really was around, like it just wasn't a box that I'm interested being in, you know? So there was actually a lot more agency there than I had imagined. But to continue on with my story, like basically after that, I started working. I got a job in arts administration, and basically it just wasn't a good fit. I'm just gonna leave it at that. But it just was not a good fit at all for me. And then my thinking was, you know, if I'm going to be stuck here, right in front of a computer from 9 to 5, I might as well pivot into a career or a path that will help me make more money, you know, and that can also challenge me intellectually, because I think that was the other thing that I was struggling with. Like, I didn't feel like when I was in arts administration, and I'm not saying it's not intellectually challenging per se. I'm simply saying that for me particularly, it just wasn't really, like, it felt like a lot of politics for me, and I just wasn't interested in doing any of that. And again, right, I want to be very clear that that's like my own perception of it and not anybody else's experience, but that was my experience. And so I went back to school. I started studying economics, and with an eye towards like working for the insurance industry, because during this period, it was very strange. Like, I basically kind of received an invitation from someone who was pretty influential in the industry, and she saw a potential or something in me, and she was like, why don't you look into working for insurance. And I was like, okay, I had never thought about that, but something about that invitation kind of stuck with me. And so I went back to school, only applied to one school, got into that school, and basically did a bunch of prerequisites in order to get into the actuarial program, which was what I thought I was going to get into. And one of the requirements was to do an economics course, a macroeconomics course. And then I ended up being in this professor's class that was like, I went into 1 office hour and she was just very impressed with, I don't know, I guess my questions. I really have no idea. I still have no idea now. And then she basically asked if I would, be interested in applying for a new master's in economics program that they had in the school. And it completely took me by surprise. And I said yes. She wrote me the recommendation letter after seeing that I got pretty good grades for my midterm. And then I did that for a year. And then after that, I started working for the insurance company as an actuary, as I guess like a junior actuary. And so that was kind of on one end of the universe, right? And then the other end of the universe was also that after I was done with music school, I realized that I really wanted to write my own songs, and I started doing that, and I started producing my own music, recorded my own music, and then released it. And it had always been, I think, a childhood dream of mine to release music. And so I did that, and it was really beautiful in many ways. I had a beautiful launch party, and I got a lot of really beautiful, heartfelt feedback, but something was just like missing, and I think ironically, I was becoming more unhappy with my music making, with my life, and I just wasn't sure why. And so I think this was around a time, I released my music in 2019, in March. And afterwards, I, for some reason, felt really drawn towards transcendental meditation. And so I did a course, and then I read a bunch of like Eckhart Tolle books. And what was really the turning point for me was reading Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way. And you know this story because this was how I found you. So I started reading that book, and in The Artist's Way, if any of you listening have read it, Julia prescribed this exercise called the morning pages, where basically you just write out everything you want to talk about or write about in 3 pages, right? Every morning. That's like the prescribed exercise. And so I started doing that, and I'm not really sure what happened. It was all kind of like very subconscious. And I went back to those notes. There was nothing special. It was just like me like trying to get through like those 3 pages. But I started feeling like something was calling me towards something else. Like it was like, yes, do this, but also do something else. And I was not really sure what I was looking for. I was like, I remember this was the time when I was listening to a lot of different podcasts, reading a lot of different books. I think I was literally going through every single episode of Krista Tippett's On Being. Like I was just consuming everything, right? But there was this very clear voice, and also at the same time, my grandma kept coming to me in dreams. Like I kept having dreams about my grandma. And the voice told me to get an astrology reading. So I was like, okay, whatever, right? This is so random. And at that point, like I was always kind of interested in astrology. Like I had been introduced by a bunch of grad school friends, and I knew that I was a Pisces and I really resonated with being a Pisces, but I had never thought about studying my chart in greater depth. Like it was like I was reading a bunch of books and I was reading about the planets, reading about the signs, but never really put them together, like in terms of a cohesive system. So I started looking into different astrologers. And one of the astrologers I was looking into was Deborah Silverman. And I love, all the podcast episodes, right, that she was in, loved the YouTube channels, thought she was just the funniest person ever, and really wanted to get a reading from her. But obviously Deborah Silverman doesn't just do readings, right, for folks. And so there was a list of students, or I think teacher students, astrologers in her website. But I looked through the list and none of them was like a hit for me. And it's funny because I guess, I'm sure we'll be talking about this too, but recently I learned from my human design that I'm a generator. So if any of you know human design, like generators are supposed to feel this, like, I've been talking about it in terms of like yuck versus yum. Like I just feel like a yuck versus yum response. You know, it's like, do I want to do this? Do I not want to? Anyways, I looked at that list and I was just like, didn't feel like any of them was like a match, you know? And then the second line of defense was to look at local astrologers in New York, and also didn't feel a hit. And then I Googled Deborah Silverman astrology students or something like that. And then you miraculously popped up. It was very random. And I remember seeing your website and then just kind of being like, this is the astrologer I'm supposed to work with. And then I got a reading from you. And then I started studying with you. And the rest is history. Here I am. That was long.
And I know in your chart, it's like, and me, talk about me and how I fit and all that so well. Thank you. I don't think, I've heard, obviously I've heard your story in many pieces and over a long period of time, and I've never heard it in like more of a linear fashion that's longer like that. So that's fun for me to think about. Like, yeah. So there are so many points there that have me thinking about like living the fuck out of your chart, because you were feeling into, you noticed as a kid how you could survive, right? Like, I think sometimes our chart has, I think it can have a lot of information about like survival strategies, right?
Yeah.
Like survival strategies for the younger self, feeling into, this seems to be what works for people. This seems to be what will keep me safe. This seems to be how I can figure out how to fit into the system that I've been delivered to, Like, if this is the box, then these are the parts of me that can thrive somehow inside of this box,
Totally.
And then you get older and you start to be like, wait, box, it starts to just be like, oh, I don't actually have to be in this box. If I could apply these abilities and these gifts outside of this box, what would I do with these,
Yeah.
Does that feel like something that resonates with your lived experience?
Definitely. And I think, one thing that I learned recently, about my chart, I mean, not really recently, but I've recently been, I guess I should also say that in terms of my astrological studies, I've kind of studied with a few different teachers with slightly different orientations, right? I feel like all the different teachers that I've been drawn to and then started building relationships with really taught me different aspects of astrology and also different lineages, different perspectives. And I would say the most kind of recent framework for me is really Hellenistic astrology. And looking at my chart, my strongest planet is Saturn, right? Because Saturn is in its home sign in Capricorn. And then I have two exalted planets, right? Which are Jupiter in Cancer and Mars in Capricorn. And so I feel like there is a lot of that. It is no surprise then that I was really feeling this gravity towards wanting to have that structure, right? Like wanting to have that container, because Saturn is the planet that rules discipline, rules a sense of responsibility, right? And that is also, I have a huge Capricorn stellium right there. And I think that that is, the moment I really kind of drop deeper into my chart, I was like, whoa, like, yes, obviously, And it's like, it's interesting because that, Pisces sun, right, in the seventh house is always something that I felt, but it's not something. It's something that requires a little bit more clearing. Like I had to clear some systems in my life and get things in order for me to be able to more easily access my solar qualities.
Yeah, as a Pisces sun myself, I really resonate with that, and I think that that's a survival mechanism from living in a culture that doesn't know what to do with Pisces.
Yes. Yes.
We go to we adapt, which is what Pisces does, and become what we need to be, you
Yeah,
know, the
exactly.
survive slash thrive. I remember in our first reading, I feel like I ended up spending the most time on Saturn, and that being kind of like where we had a real connection, talking about Capricorn as a as an archetype of time, and about Saturn as a planetary.
Yes. I remember you had said in that reading an analogy of Capricorn being the mountain goat, right? And then the question for Capricorn is not whether you can climb the mountain, but it's like, is this the mountain you want to climb? And that was something that really resonated and kind of touched me very deeply because it confirmed my lived experience of having climbed all these mountains that I actually, when I really kind of dropped into myself, didn't really care about. Although I still believe, that a part of me is needing those experiences, right? Like on a soul level, subconsciously, I was really signing up for those experiences, even though they probably were not ultimately the situation I want to settle in. They were still experiences that were important for me, and they taught me very important lessons about myself and about the world that I lived in.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a repetitive pattern around teachers, which like authority figures, bosses, different people who kind of magically appeared and saw something in you, saw your drive, but also I'm sure like your bright spirit and intelligence, and like wanted to help you. And made the way for some of those paths to appear for you.
Yeah, thank you for that reflection. That was such a beautiful, gracious reflection. I definitely feel like I have always been blessed with authority figures, right? That were very gracious to me. And it's like, again, right? Authority figures are human beings too. And some of them are probably in their intention or their approach towards me, some of them are more, have purer intentions than others. Let's just say, right? There have been tricky teacher-student relationships. But I think that, yeah, it's interesting, because this is something that I'm still kind of like working through, right? In my own life, because there is a way in which I feel like for me, it is kind of important to be around teacher figures in my life that kind of help me pave the path. And not in like a damsel in distress kind of way, right? But really in a way that is like collaborative and in a way that is nourishing. And I don't know, maybe that's also other people's lived experience. But I feel like for me, I do gravitate towards teachers and wanting to always be a student. I feel like I know how to be a student. I know how to appreciate different teachers precisely for what they offer,
Yeah.
And that's something that I have developed more consciousness around in my own life, but it's also something that I've just naturally been able to do with authority figures, you know. And I think going back to my son in seventh house, right, it is kind of about slowly learning how to develop sovereign relationships with other people in my life, you know, really be able to, because I think when you are in a relationship, when you're truly in a relationship, then it stops becoming, or it helps you be aware of any potential possibility for extraction or like transactionality, right? Which I think is something that we are taught in our culture, in our society, to be something that's okay. You know, like you just kind of, I don't know, pay to be in a teacher's course and then you, that's it, right? But I think to me, like having an actual relationship with the teacher and also having teachers who are interested in having a relationship with me is really important because then it grounds the knowledge in kind of an embodied experience, you know? And again, this, maybe we, this goes back to like me being a Virgo rising, you know, me having that Capricorn stellium, right? Because Earth sign wants to deepen into embodiment. And I feel like there's a tendency in our culture to disembody knowledge, you know, to take knowledge as just knowledge without really considering the human behind the knowledge. Because that's just honestly not possible, right? Like Einstein was a human being. And the reason why Einstein figured out certain things was because Einstein was Einstein. You know, and I think we like to erase the humanity of knowledge, but I have always found that to be deeply unsettling. And I think that when we ground our knowledge in relationships, then we can allow the knowledge to evolve, right? And to kind of be this alive thing. You know, we also start to have a relationship with the knowledge rather than just kind of letting it be tools, which tools are great too, you know, but it's like, do we consider our tools as animate beings or not? Yeah.
This is really, really important. I think that when you like the scientific machine, you know, like the political, scientific, what's the word from Eisenhower? The anyway,
Industrial complex.
yes, the complex. Want it's designed to have us believe that it's disembodied and it's objective in order to control us. You know
Yes.
what I mean? And so if you expect information to be disembodied, because that's just what information is, which is how you've been taught that it is, you know, you're participating in that disembodiment and that disempowering. And so like, whoa, you just really hit on something that's really important to me. Because I'm always personal here, guys, because this is embodied, you know, like I'm a human behind this information. Always remember that, you know. Filter through yourself. Yeah, thank you for saying it that way. Yeah, I think that it's interesting to think about, you know, what, especially for people more new to astrology, it's interesting to think about, right? How like we both have a sun at the same degree,
That's
Pisces,
right.
nearly the same minutes. You're 1336, I'm 1338.
Whoa.
There's something there, right? There's like a resonance that exists. And Julia Cameron is too.
Oh, yeah. We'll get into that in a second.
And then we both not in the same sign, not in the same sign, not in the same house, but we both, I mean, in the same house, we have moon in 10th. And I think Moon in 10th has its own, like, you know, if you look up the cookbook, right? If you are on Google because you're learning your chart and you're like starting to understand what's there, you can go to Moon in the 10th house. And there's definitely resonances. We both actually have Ceres there too, now that I'm looking. Like Ceres type of moon that's there. And but at the same time, what, and I think a lot of these resonances, my moon being in Capricorn, I feel very deeply the Capricorn archetype, which you have so much of. I feel like we carry a lot of these sort of resonant signatures. And then, of course, their charts are also very different in many other ways. Another similarity I'm looking now is that we both have a grand trine water, meaning that we have planets in all of the water signs that make a big blue triangle if you're looking at a chart. And then those create a kite shape, a sextiles to Capricorn. I have that as well. There's these similarities. And then we're also very different people. We have very different approaches to things.
Totally.
Very different, like, ways of being with all kinds of stuff, information, people. And that is something that's really fascinating about getting deeper into it.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, this is where I would do my rising sign advertisement, right? Because I feel like really, me being a Virgo rising and you being an Aries rising, like, I think of the rising sign as the ways in which we organize spontaneous situations or circumstances, right? Like when, somebody wakes you up at 4 a.m. in the morning and asks you to do something, right? You're gonna do it the way your rising sign is, Which for me, being a Virgo rising, I'm like, where's my Google Sheets? I need to like do my Excel spreadsheet, right? Like I need to know what's going on, like who are the sources, right? And I think, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but perhaps an Aries rising is just like, okay, I'll just do it.
And somehow I think our common placements allow us to collaborate okay.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of perfect, right? Because when you think of Aries and Virgo, I think Aries and Virgo really help each other in many ways.
Yeah, they definitely, they both they can they have what the other needs in many ways. That's true.
Virgo struggles with paralysis by analysis, and Aries can suffer from lack of planning.
Yeah, here are. So I do want to circle back to your discussion at the beginning of your story around not feeling like you fit in, and just like sort of not knowing how to belong with your peers. Which may have also, right, supported looking to authority figures, maybe, or looking to the teachers. And for those of you listening who know Jonathan, you may be surprised by this anecdote because I feel like I know you to be someone who sort of like incidentally connects with peers in your circles. And so I'm wondering if you could contextualize how you see those stories related to your chart and how they've unfolded over time.
Yeah, thank you for asking about that. Well, I have two answers for you. One is I think the more adult answer, and one that is probably, I mean, both are rooted in my chart, but the other one is kind of more slightly, I don't know, this is a little unverifiable, right? A little maybe superstitious, but it's interesting because I have never had trouble finding friends in the US. Isn't that weird? And US is a Cancer nation. And my 11th house of community, shared hopes and dreams, I mean, actually, maybe I shouldn't say that. That's not entirely true. I have had situations being in the US where I did not feel like I fit in. But I don't feel like there's like a hostile, even though, you know, I'm not saying I don't recognize that there are systemic injustices here. I want to be very clear about that. But on a personal level, I feel like it's been really like I just kind of show up, you know, and I constellate the right people. And then the people who are not right for me is just kind of pushed away out of my field. And I grew up in Indonesia, and the Independence Day of Indonesia is 17th of August. And so Indonesia is a Leo nation, and Leo is in my 12th house. So maybe that, right? Who knows? That's one way I've been kind of thinking about that. I'm like, it's really interesting to think about what the sun sign of a country is, right, or a nation is, and then see where it falls in your chart. And maybe it will tell you something interesting about your experience. I don't know. This is a bit controversial. But I've been thinking about that. Anyways, but I would say the more kind of rooted explanation or another way to look into this situation is I have Pluto in my third house. And third house speaks to like immediate environment, right? It can also speak to siblings, although I have a beautiful relationship with my sister. It speaks to like the community of where you come from and like the immediate community you were surrounded by. At least that's one of the ways we can explain the third house. The 11th house speaks more to like when we are going after our hopes and dreams, who's going to constellate to our field, right? And so it can be, it's a bit of a Venn diagram, right? There's certainly an overlap in there, but I think there are also areas where there are, you know, people who strictly belongs in your 11th house and communities that strictly belong in your third house. And having Pluto in my third house is like no joke, you know? It's it was tough. And I think that it's still something that I am working through. I think that one of the ways I've been thinking about Pluto is, you know, I think astrology helps us not only contextualize our inner world, but it also helps us contextualize how our inner world interface with the external world, right? And so I think a lot of the times, you know, we live in a culture that really values transparency, you know, or like authenticity is often seen as like sharing details about your life. And to me, that is kind of a challenging concept, because I do believe that sometimes, like where you have your Pluto, this is a bit of a personal gnosis and something that I've seen in some people's life too. It's like maybe where you are like working on it on your own. You know, I don't know. I have had different discussions with different teachers about this, and not everybody agrees with me, and that's fine too. But my own understanding of Pluto, or my own Pluto, is that that's kind of like a medicine that I am reserving for myself, and it's kind of a deep wounding, deep part that I'm like, it's hard to share that, you know? And it's kind of like something that is probably never gonna be totally healed. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that possibility. I think that, actually, maybe let me clarify before I go further. I was wondering if your question had more to do with the transformation around like from when I was feeling like I don't fit in into like maybe how I am now, or is that
the way you're answering is really beautiful, and thank you. I first of all, I don't want to presume there it has been a transformation. I just mean, if there has been, we can talk about that.
Yeah, but,
totally. I'm not going to define it that way. What I mean is more just that for those of you who may know you in present time and find be such a warm, congenial, adored even person in the circles that you're a part of. Like explaining a little bit about how those recollections from your childhood feel to you now, especially vis-a-vis this idea of living your chart.
Like
what you may be learning with your chart around this space. Yeah.
Thank you. That was a very helpful recentering. Yes. So then, you know, if you look at my chart, I do have a trine right between my Pluto and Chiron. And Chiron is in Cancer in the 11th house. And Chiron, I'm sure, you know, folks have heard you speak about it. Folks have heard me speak about it. It's like kind of a major player. And Chiron is really this archetype of wounded healer, but Chiron is also the teacher, right, to all the great heroes in the Greek mythology. And so to me, like, this Pluto-Chiron trine was really tough, I think, without any sort of consciousness around it, you know. But it really helped that I remember, maybe it was our second reading, that you brought into the view this idea of Jupiter. And perhaps this was what you were wanting to get into as well when you were talking about different teachers being influential in my life. Because I have Jupiter exalted in Cancer in the 11th house, making a trine to my Mercury in Pisces, right? Which is in its detriment and its fall. And it also happens to be my chart ruler, so yay. But... yeah, I feel like once I deepen into this archetype of Jupiter, right? It was so funny because I remember listening to that recording that you sent me of Jupiter in Cancer in the 11th house, and I'm like, "What? Really?" But I feel like, you know, this is where, you know, when people come to me for readings, I like to talk to them about their Jupiter placement, because I feel like Jupiter is so, like, it kind of like runs wild. You know, I like to think of Jupiter, I mean, depending on the sign and the condition of your Jupiter, obviously everybody has different Jupiter stories, right? But in my own life, like, my Jupiter has just kind of been this other force that I wasn't really aware of, you know? And as I put consciousness around my Jupiter qualities, like Jupiter being about expansion, Jupiter being about perhaps even like an excess of certain qualities, you know, I do recognize that part of my difficulty being in communities was that always I found myself in these what I call unintentional communities, right? Communities that were perhaps constellated around being in the same geographical area, or I don't know, like, I think for me, thinking about whether I really want to be in the presence of these people and the quality of energy that I want to spend or maybe not spend with these people is very important. Like, Cancer has that really selective quality, right? Cancer is a water sign. So Cancer can have this porous quality of maybe, you know, one psychic boundary versus other psychic boundaries. And I realized that part of why communal living is a little tough for me is because I expect a higher degree of care than perhaps other people, you know, or than perhaps is realistic within that context. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, like, really learning to curb that, really learning to be skillful around, I want to be around these kinds of communities. These are the requirements that are needed, right, for me to then be in community with another person. This is the kind of friendship I want. This is the kind of friendship I don't want. Like, it's interesting because when we think of Jupiter, it does kind of have this overflow vibe, right? But with Cancer, I think part of a major life lesson for me has been around curbing this Cancerian quality, because otherwise I just Cancer everyone, you know. I'm just like always trying to take care of people, and sometimes people don't appreciate that. People don't want to be taken care of, you know, or not in the ways that is that I'm available for. And also, like, you know, being having an exalted Cancer, my experience with exalted planets is that these are the forces where you are doing it in a way that is so socially acceptable and people love you for it. You know, like, for example, my Mars in Capricorn, right? Also,
Yes.
you know, being really organized about my Martian things, right? About like getting things done. Like I was always like, I have a plan of attack. I don't just go into situations with no plans, right? And that's very valued in this society. Jupiter in Cancer, I can be very inclusive. You know, I can be very just kind of wanting to embrace everybody and wanting to see the best in everybody. And I'm not saying that that's not good. I'm just saying that in order for me to be able to do that well, in a way that facilitates reciprocity, I need to be very clear about what the boundaries are. You know, I need to be like, okay, I'm going to be totally Jupiter in Cancer in this Zoom class, you know, that I'm in with like five other really beautiful humans, right? Or like, I'm going to be totally Jupiter in Cancer in a reading with someone who wants a reading with me, right? But without that container, the soft meat of Cancer is just kind of, you know, feeling very vulnerable. And so I'm
Yeah.
not able to Cancer effectively.
And do you feel that with Chiron near that Jupiter in Cancer, that moving through Chiron experiences, doing healing work with yourself, healing things from the past around particularly maybe belonging, belonging to yourself too, not just belonging to a group, allowed you to feel safe with those boundaries so that you really can let that Jupiter go and do what that Jupiter wants to do.
Major. Yeah, that's like a major point of healing. And also, I think wherever we have Chiron, and I've kind of spoken to you about this too. I'm thinking maybe I heard this from Jeff Hinshaw. I'm not sure. But Chiron as where we are supposed to teach, right? But that perhaps our immediate environment is not instantly accepting of that lesson that we have, right? It's kind of like, maybe put in another way, Chiron is where we have deep medicine that we're supposed to share, but that this deep medicine has to come through a certain level of healing. And even once you have gotten through that level of healing, it will still kind of be not something that is always accepted by everyone else. You know, there is always kind of going to be that you're going against the grain, right? But in going against the grain, you are bringing your gifts. You know, I think of Chiron like that because, you know, in my Chiron in 11th house of community and belonging, what I've learned is that I require a higher threshold of radical acceptance around the community I want to belong to. And I think that I would say the first 28 or so years of my life, like I put myself in situations where I've had to audition. You know, like I've had to prove how worthy I am to be in that community. And unfortunately, you know, if that's the price of admission to getting into a community, right, then and it's not kind of in resonance with me, that's going to be really challenging because I'm going to see other people treating each other in a certain kind of exclusive way. Am I making sense? Am I being too abstract?
Feeling you.
Yeah. I think that and it's not easy, you know, because sometimes like I would be maybe in like a work situation and someone says something that is not as inclusive as it can be. And I think part of my Chiron in Cancer is to stand up and be like, hey, you know, like, what about this? What about that? right? And maybe not attacking the person, but really being clear in that I have a role, that I am more sensitive about this versus other people, right? And for the greater good of myself and also the communities that I'm in, part of my responsibility is to speak up, against some of these things that I don't perceive to be as inclusive as they can be,
Yeah.
And if I don't feel like a certain community has room to change, it is my responsibility to extract myself out of that community. And I don't have to have tons of communities. I don't have to have tons of people. But I do have to be very selective about who I'm surrounded by, because going back to your observation about that water trine, I feel
Yeah.
like a water trine just ex I'm just picking up on like people's information, right? And yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like, well, they're all connected because it's a grand trine. Like you're the Pluto and Scorpio, like that sometimes you're there to say the words that create that opening for, whoa, this is death here, like this is uncomfortable, or this is painful to listen to, or like the exposure of like some kind of power situation is brewing, and that's part of what's there, like it's part of the signature, and it's
Absolutely.
really important to you for you to let that move through you, right? Because it's your sun that's the other planet that's involved with your Chiron and Pluto,
Yes.
like for your own vitality. To like push the stuff down, to not let it move out of you, and to not speak what you're feeling, will stifle your sun.
Yes. Totally.
Thank you for sharing that. And then I think the final bit to share there is how all of that moves to particularly Neptune, but also all of your planets in Capricorn in your fifth house. So like finding some way to express that and doing it in a way that has that visionary activist quality, as well as the Mars in Capricorn, the Saturn in Capricorn, structure and drive. Putting it into some kind of container for expression.
Absolutely. And I think playing around with what that container looks like, or what the protocol looks like, which is also a very Saturnian word, right? Yeah, I feel like that's gonna be my life lesson. And I don't think that it's ever going to, it's an alive thing, right? So as we know, our chart is always animated by different planets transiting through it, different things going on. And so like I do feel like that fifth house, particularly, is always going to be a work in progress, and is always going to be kind of a an invitation into deeper understanding of the nature of Capricorn. And what does Capricorn mean, right? Like Capricorn is not a very playful sign, and I think the fifth house of romance, self-expression, does want to be conventionally, right, very kind of free and just, showing your who you are, right? But a certain level of thought and deliberation and controlled experiment is something that I'm always kind of working through. Yeah, for sure.
So, would you say that you feel that you're living the fuck out of your chart?
That's a great question. I would say yes. It's a little uncomfortable as a sun in seventh house person to, for me to say that. But I do think that A couple things, right? Especially since learning astrology more deeply has helped me more consciously live the fuck out of my chart. One is, I think astrology has really helped me find a language to describe my inner experience that is expansive and precise at the same time. And, you know, my sun in seventh house in Pisces, right, and my Virgo rising really need that. Like, I need that balance between precision and expansiveness. And also, I think it's helped me, I think, through healing my 11th house, my community wounds, perhaps, right? It's kind of helped me see more clearly my own gifts for holding space for other people, which is honestly not something that has been confirmed or affirmed in my own life, you know, prior to finding astrology. Like, I think I've always been very good at it, but, you know, holding space without the container of something like astrology or maybe psychology can end up in you just being exploited by people. You know, like you're just that person that people come to talk about their problems, and they never ask you about your problems, you know? And that's really tough. And so I think, you know, my son was really suffering because I was that friend, you know, that you would just kind of go to when you have problems, and then you would just talk my ears off for like 3 hours, and I'm totally okay with that. And then you left without knowing anything about my life. Like, there is a discomfort, you know, being a sun in seventh house person around like centering myself and my own problems.
Especially
And
Pisces
yeah,
too.
especially in Pisces. Right, exactly. So I think that having this language, you know, and then also allowing myself to follow this desire, this calling, this inclination to start offering readings to other people has helped me also signal to myself how much I appreciate that ability to hold space for other people. And I think that's helped me become better at boundaries because, you know, I can't just go around like holding space for everyone, man. Right? Yeah. So in that sense, I think that it's helped me. And also, you know, notably, for anyone who's maybe a bit further in their astrological study, I have Vesta right next to my sun. So like having that, you know, Vesta being about containment, Vesta being about honoring the sacredness, right, of my solar quality. Like, what are some of the ways that I can honor the sacredness of my solar gifts has been a really powerful learning curve for me. And I think it's helped me more deeply live into my chart. And I think, yeah, like just putting consciousness around that Jupiter in Cancer, I do feel like I kind of embody that, you know? And at the same time, also that Saturn in fifth house, in Capricorn person, because as you know, Britton, I love like, you know, sharing the rules before we start a container. Yeah. And I think it's really powerful, you know, and I think it's helpful because, you know, perhaps I feel like Capricorn gets such a bad rep in this moment in time, right? Because as a lot of people listening probably know, Pluto is currently in Capricorn. The US is going through a Pluto return, right? So I think we do have a very cynical eye, cynical view towards Capricorn, you know, or like structures. We are in a time of great transition. But I do feel like structure helps us more deeply access our gifts and more freely access our gifts. And a lot of us are not taught that certain structures are allowed, you know, and I think that that can really impede our ability to live the fuck out of our charts. Because when we don't allow ourselves the boundaries that we need, when we don't allow ourselves the protection that we need, then we can't fully give our gifts when we feel unsafe. And I want to be very clear here around how safety is not synonymous with comfort, right? Like being safe doesn't mean that you're going to be comfortable. Because sometimes you do have to be uncomfortable. But I think that creating structures within which you can feel safe to share your gifts is a prerequisite to sharing your gifts.
Yeah, it's like radical structure.
Yes.
Claiming your right to have the container.
Yes.
That's for your magic. Even if it doesn't look like what other people want your container to be, or maybe they don't want you to have a container, so you can just be open.
Yes.
I think Capricorn, spoken as the Capricorn moon with the Pisces sun, is just so helpful for Pisces generally too, because
Yeah.
Pisces can go everywhere.
Totally. Totally.
It's so vast that the Capricorn part of you can hold that Piscean part of you into a vessel, you know?
Yes.
So, thank you so much for sharing your chart with us and talking about your story, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me, Britton. This was such a delight.
Can you share with people how they can connect with you and work with you?
Sure. I hang around on Instagram quite a bit. And it's funny because I started my Instagram account under my music moniker, which is actually my the English spelling of my childhood name. So it's Nate Chi, NATE underscore QI. And actually, my website is natechimusic.com. And you can get readings from me. Just read about how I do my readings. There's a form there, and yeah, I love giving readings, so I would love to read for you.
You're very gifted.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, and we are going to continue this conversation on Thursday night, August 5th, for our webinar on moving the fuck out of your chart. And
Yes.
if you are hearing this after August 5th, you can still access the replay through my links. So come join.
Yay. Perfect. Yes, we'd love to see you there.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Britton.
Thank you for tuning in to my conversation with Jonathan Coe today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you will seek Jonathan in Instagram. I hope you will think about connecting with Jonathan for a reading if their voice resonates with you. If you're interested in joining Jonathan and me for charting your course 2021-2022, please check out the links in the show notes. Very soon, I will have the course page up at brittonlarue.com. We're still fine-tuning it. The technicalities of web page building are always a matter of endurance, and they really take longer than you ever think that they will. But you can get go ahead and get your name on the mailing list for charting your course. There's no obligation to register if you have your name on that list, but only the people on the list will be eligible for the early bird bonus. If you want to connect with us for the Living the Fuck Out of Your Chart free webinar, and you are listening to this after August 5th, no problem. The link that's in the show notes, and I'm going to have it in my various places for you to still access it. The link will just have the replay. So you can still register for it and enjoy it. I know it's going to be really juicy. It's going to be something that I think that I'm probably going to be sharing with people for a long time, because I anticipate us to like really get to some essences of things there. So definitely join us for Living the Fuck Out of Your Chart, or join via the replay. If you have any questions at all about charting your course, or about, you know, whether it's logistics, whether it's content, please, please, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to answer your questions, happy to hop on a quick call even, if you want to talk it over to think about whether it's the right choice for you. I'm wishing you a beautiful day. I'm wishing you a beautiful August, or whatever month that you're in when you hear this. And thanks once again to my dear, dear friend, Jonathan Coe, for spending some time with me to record that conversation. Cheers.